January 3rd, 54231. This is David Cruz with the Comstock Report. Weekend visits for the Trump search for an ag secretary had them focused on a couple of Texans. I sure hope not, as no one of stature in ag from Texas is pro-ethanol, so a Texan for ag secretary would round out the Trump cabinet with another anti-ethanol member. The EPA administrator nominee is rampant anti-ethanol, with the Energy and Interior Secretaries, along with a nominee for Secretary of State, all supported by Big Oil. Carl Icahn is a special advisor on regulation and modifying RINs, which are the enforcement mechanism for the RFS, is at the top of his list. These were all the people that we in the ethanol industry had been fighting against all these years, and they are being put into positions of power within the Trump administration. If your intention was to limit the use of biofuel, this is the A-team who has been well prepared to do that. I believe that they'll block approval of more access for higher ethanol blends and reduce the CAFE fleet mileage standards for the future, undermining the need for octane, which is supplied by ethanol. They will leave something that they will call the RFS in place so that they can claim to support it, but it will not be the same RFS as we have now. It is not if the ethanol industry has been trumped by Trump, but only a matter of getting the details as to how and when. The latest to be considered, the top candidate for the Secretary of Agriculture is reportedly former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue, who served from 2003 to 2011. I think Trump is getting tired of all the interviews. Perdue reportedly wanted to make Georgia the biofuels corridor, whatever that means. But his only big effort was a cellulosic plant in 2007 that went belly up, costing U.S. taxpayers $64 million and Georgia taxpayers another $6 million that was sold for $5 million in 2012. When a Georgia delegation wanted to learn about ethanol, they went to Brazil, not Iowa. The former governor probably knows more about cellulosic ethanol than he should, and not a darn thing about real corn-based ethanol. Senator Chuck Grassley sent Perdue a letter in 2007 criticizing state fuel regulations in Georgia that hindered ethanol blending. This must have been a real problem at the time for Grassley to have picked this out. Given his only experience with ethanol was a cellulosic disaster, how pro-ethanol can he be? Corn ethanol has never been important to him or his state. Peanuts, cotton, peaches, and chickens are a few of the diverse number of Georgia crops. I would expect that the poultry integrators would be elated if the Purdue choice is confirmed, as he could get rid of annoying USDA GIPSA regulations for them, bringing indentured servitude in the poultry industry back to Georgia. You're listening to the Comstock Report. 3, 2, 1. My ethanol put option is working, as I got another nice ethanol dividend check in the mail last weekend. The plan was that ethanol investments would pay dividends when corn was selling below the cost of production, and that is what is happening right now. The ethanol industry has been the most profitable end user for corn, and that profitability is beginning to show up in some expansion by the industry. Existing plants will make investments to boost production as well as in infrastructure to reach export markets to become less dependent on the RFS. Ethanol demand is still limited by gasoline usage, but we have seen ethanol production push past the E10 blend wall due to higher blends reaching consumers and larger exports. One should not forget that 400,000 people put down payments on Tesla's new electric vehicle, which they will produce at capacity. That is only a handful compared to 260 million vehicles in the United States, but you get the drift that electric vehicles use no ethanol. A company called Elite Octane is building a new 120 million gallon corn ethanol plant near Atlantic, Iowa. They began construction this year with completion in mid-2018. The plant was actually a decade in the planning. The industry has endured a number of material project failures, as there always is with a startup industry of this kind, leading to the current concentration. The shakeouts have left it stronger. On the grains, grain and soy market bulls are touting both wet and dry conditions in South America and reinflation, believing that funds will start buying corn and soybeans like they did last year, fueling the big rally so that everyone can sell and live happily ever after. Yeah, it could be a fairy tale. It is bothersome that so many expect it. We would note that the price average for December was $1.25 higher for soybeans than last year's February price, which we locked up as our guaranteed crop insurance price with a Hudson buy-up. In other words, the market is not as depressed as it was when funds got involved last spring. South American crops are not quite as fragile as they're made out to be, And where they've had early crops, they've had good weather. You've been listening to the Comstock Report. For more information and marketing opportunities, visit us in Royal Iowa online at comstock.com or call 712-933-9400.